Katina Macris, and welcome back to Limelight Radio. First of all, I have to say to my producer, Brian, that song, I used to sing that to myself in my head when I was sick with Lyme disease. So
really?
Bravo to you.
I did not know that. Do you know who was singing that? I'll tell you who it is.
Who?
Trinidadian-born Billy Ocean.
Oh, Billy Ocean. Love him. That's awesome.
Okay.
Well, anyway, thank you, Brian. And audience, welcome back to Limelight Radio. On our second segment right now, I am so honored to have Lyme Research Alliance on air with me. This is a fantastic organization in Southern Connecticut. And with us today is Dr. Harriet Katsouris. Let me tell you about Lyme Research Alliance, formerly known as Time for Lyme. They are the leading nonprofit funder of research into Lyme and tick-borne diseases. The organization was originally founded by concerned mothers in Greenwich, Connecticut, as the Greenwich Lyme Disease Task Force, and in a little over a decade has ballooned into an organization that has been principally responsible for the creation of the Columbia Research Center for Lyme and Tick-Borne Diseases that studies chronic Lyme disease. Lyme Research Alliance rewards grants for innovative, evidence-based research at major universities. The organization has raised over $10 million and will soon be responsible for funding nearly that much in research. Today, I welcome neurologist Dr. Harriet Katsouris, who began to volunteer in the capacity as chief scientific officer of LRA 5 years ago. With the help of Scientific Advisory Board, LRA reviews grant applications and determines the most promising research ventures to receive funding. So welcome, Dr. Katsouris, to Limelight Radio.
Thank you very much.
It's my honor to have you here today. What a fantastic organization. You have been hard at work down in Southern Connecticut.
That's for sure.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit, if you could, for people that are tuning in, about what kind of research venues and programs that you really have been involved in so far.
Okay. Well, our process for grant review is basically following the rigorous guidelines established by the National Institutes of Health on a much smaller scale, obviously. And it has to meet certain scientific standards that the NIH applies to its own research grant review process. And what we like to do is to judge grants as to their evidence-based quality and their promising innovative potential. We look at things at grant applications in terms of their ability to affect prevention of Lyme and other tick-borne diseases, diagnostics, more effective and accurate diagnostic testing for Lyme and tick-borne diseases, as well as treatment for both acute Lyme and chronic Lyme disease.
Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. Such critical topics for all of us. And can you share some of the research programs that you've already been involved with?
Sure, absolutely. I can tell you about some of our active, ongoing grant programs right now. We have some amazing work, and what we like to do is to choose projects that may even have the potential to dovetail one another. So, for example, we have people looking at the phenomenon known as persisters. These are, just for an example, the Lyme organism, in the face of antibiotics, can become tolerant. Not what we call antibiotic resistance, but antibiotic tolerance, in that the Lyme organism itself goes dormant. It pretends as if it's dead, only to reactivate at a later date. We think that this mechanism is what may be happening in humans themselves. We've seen this in vitro. We've seen this in the lab, but now we're trying to take it a step further and see if this phenomenon actually occurs in a human being. It might be part of the explanation for chronic Lyme disease, or for the phenomenon that patients think they get treated with antibiotics, they're feeling great, and then all of a sudden they feel like as if the rug were pulled out from under them, and they're sick again, and they say, what the heck is going on? You know, I thought I was cured. And so we have two phenomenal researchers doing that work. We have Dr. Kim Lewis from Northeastern University studying this phenomenon, and Dr. Ying Zhang from Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. In fact, these two eminent scientists were just honored at our recent gala with the Lauren F. Brooks Hope Award for their outstanding, promising work in the field of Lyme disease research.
That is tremendous. How exciting that mm-hmm. we've got such cutting-edge research going on. It's so necessary because it's estimated that we have, you know, over 10 million people in this country alone sick with chronic forms of Lyme disease.
Yes, those numbers sound like they could be right, because I'm sure you know last August, the CDC finally fessed up and said we have 300,000, at least 300,000 new cases of Lyme disease per year. And it's well-known phenomenon now. It's been reported and observed by very respectable researchers that despite timely and adequate treatment, there is still a failure rate of 10 to 15% in the acute Lyme disease patient population. So if you take that 10 to 15% failure rate, 300,000 cases per year, it doesn't surprise me that we have 10 million chronic sufferers out there.
Yes, definitely. And so many either do not have a diagnosis or they're lumped in a kind of a quasi-MS, quasi-lupus, chronic fatigue syndrome, fibromyalgia, these sort of, you know, half-in, half-out kind of diagnoses. And
right.
It's fabulous that we're getting the research that Lyme Research Alliance is so devoted to helping us crack the code, really.
Right. Well, I think we try to give our money to researchers who can make the biggest difference. We know how patients are suffering out there and how long it's been, you know, over 30 years now, and a lot of people feel that, you know, not a lot of progress has been made. The fact of the matter is that progress is being made, but this is a very complicated illness, and it's complicated also by the fact that ticks don't only transmit Lyme disease, but there are also co-infections that compound the problem. And on top of that, you have to add individual variations in the types of strains of organisms that you're infected with. Some are more virulent than others. And on top of that, you have to add the patient's own immune system. So you can see how complex this whole picture can be. It's almost like those nested Russian dolls. You keep opening them and finding another one inside. You know, it keeps going on and on and on. But we're very optimistic that in the next couple of years, we're going to have some major answers.
That's wonderful to hear. I have been involved in the story since the year 2000. Actually, I grew up on Long Island and first heard of it, you know, back in the 80s when different people came down with it, but we still thought it was just an acute illness in those days.
Right.
So, you know, the fact that you feel there's promise and hope for some critical discoveries is very encouraging. I do hope that we are able to understand this illness and define it and treat it so that people can fully recover.
Mm-hmm. Yes, me too. It's, you know, we've understand how unique this Lyme organism is as well. We have a researcher, Dr. Valerie Culotta from Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health, who's looking into how the Lyme bacterium uses metals in our body. Most bacteria thrive on iron. Iron happens to be toxic to Lyme, to the Borrelia burgdorferi organism. It is unique to this bacterium alone. And she is looking at how to capitalize on that with trying to perhaps find drug targets that will be non-toxic to the human host, but drive iron into the Borrelia selectively while in the human body and try to eradicate the bacterium in a, I guess, as you would say, more natural way, I guess.
That's amazing. Iron. That's interesting. Wow. Mm-hmm. So, Dr. Koutsouras, stay with me because it's time for our station break.
Okay.
And we've got to hear more because this is so interesting what you are pinpointing for us with Lyme Research Alliance. So, audience, stay with us. This is Katina Makris with Limelight Radio. Be right back.
Dr. Pat. I want to introduce you to my friends at BioResource, the exclusive Beyond Balance distributor in the United States and Canada. Used clinically by top Lyme doctors, Beyond Balance herbal formulas have helped thousands of patients battle tick-borne disease by providing superior immune system support and enhancing detoxification. Beyond Balance formulas are sold through healthcare professionals. The oral drops contain non-GMO food-grade vegetable glycerin, making them well-tolerated by children and alcohol-sensitive patients. Practitioners often complement Beyond Balance formulas with high-quality homeopathic, such as Pecanus Bigeric remedies to enhance patient results. For more information, licensed or certified healthcare practitioners can call BioResource, the exclusive Beyond Balance distributor for the United States and Canada, at 800-203-3775. That's 800-203-3775. And together, let's win the battle against Lyme disease.
Tune in Thursdays at 7 a.m. Pacific, 10 a.m. Eastern to Spirit Guidance Radio with Shannon Walbrand on TransformationTalkRadio.com. This hit show with South Africa's top psychic will amaze and uplift you. Call in to receive detailed, specific answers that offer immediate solutions as Shannon interprets messages from your spirit guides. Whether it's love, business, or health, your spirit guides are ready to help. Visit ShannonWalbrand.com for more info. You are guided.
Get inspired. Create the life you desire with internationally known radio host and motivational speaker Sue London. Thursdays on TransformationTalkRadio.com at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern. Sue inspires millions of people to overcome difficult or traumatic situations in their lives. People feel hope, courage, and are ready to move forward after hearing Sue speak. Book motivational speaker Sue London for your next event at AskSueLondon.com. That's AskSueLondon.com.
Hello, this is Peter Aquilina, CEO and founder of Deer Defense LLC. For over 15 years, I have been dedicated to tick reduction and the prevention of Lyme disease and other tick-borne diseases. Deer abatement and tick reduction is what we do, and it is all we do. We offer deer fence sales and installation, organic tick sprays, even a simple and inexpensive Lyme risk assessment for your property. Call or email us today at 203-550-8350 or deerdefense@gmail.com. That's deerdefence@gmail.com.
Tune in each Wednesday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 Eastern Time on Transformation Talk Radio to Limelight Radio with Katina Macris. This is an inspirational, cutting-edge radio show educating worldwide listeners on a diversity of Lyme disease-related topics. Each week, Katina will interview some of the world's leaders in health, wellness, spirituality, and human potential. For more information, visit LimelightRadio.com.
Welcome back to Limelight Radio, everyone. This is Katina Macris, and visiting with us is Dr. Harriet Katsouris from Lyme Research Alliance. Fascinating information we're learning from Dr. Katsouris today about some of the research that is going on with Lyme disease, and it's really my privilege to bring this information to you because this is really cutting-edge news. So thank you, Dr. Katsouris, once again.
And you're welcome.
Yes. And so tell us a little bit more about some of the programs that you're funding and that you're most interested in with research.
Sure. Well, we're very proud to call Dr. John Ocott, an infectious disease specialist from Johns Hopkins School of Medicine, as one of our grant recipients and colleagues. He is what I call the doctor's doctor. We gave him seed money about 5-6 years ago to start his SLICE study, they call it. It's a study of Lyme, immunology, and something. I can't remember exactly what SLICE stands for. But anyway, well, he has the most pristine patient group that he has studied from day one of acute Lyme disease. They came in with the erythema migrans rash. He diagnosed them, treated them in standard fashion, and he has been following them all these years. And he has shown that 10 to 15% failure rate. And And he is also looking now at how these patients' systems react, this 10 to 15% failure group reacts, so maybe he can unlock some of the mystery behind that. He's also doing fascinating work with Dr. Steven Schutzer of Rutgers and Dr. Mark Eshoo of IBIS Biosciences, which is a subsidiary of Abbott Labs. And they're looking at patients with acute Lyme disease and taking a specimen of the skin of the erythema migrans rash and of whole blood and looking at it with space-age technology to study what strain Borrelia is in the rash and or blood. And in so doing, they can identify what strains are confined to the skin alone, what strains are much more infective, much more virulent, and get into the blood. This may mean that one day, when we can analyze the actual strain or strains that a patient is infected with, we can tailor their antibiotic treatment appropriate to the virulence and infectivity of the Borrelia burgdorferi organism. No more guesswork as to, well, you know, we'll give you 3 weeks of doxycycline. Maybe that's not enough, or maybe that's not the right antibiotic for that strain. This is really going to be helpful for the clinician out there who oftentimes it's, you know, guesswork.
They're driving in the dark, I say a lot of the time. So poor things. I mean, I feel awful for some of these frontline physicians that are right out there in the trenches. And they're, as I said, driving in the dark. I have to guesstimate to the best of their ability what they're dealing with a patient. So really amazing what you just told us. That's stunning.
Yeah, it's excellent work. I mean, very high quality stuff.
Very high quality. Now, along the same lines, though, I'm thinking when it comes to diagnostics, we have discovered, sad to say, that the two-tiered testing approach of the ELISA test and the Western blot is not so accurate with diagnostics for Lyme disease. And some new diagnostic tests are being tried. Isn't that correct?
That's right. In fact, I think what we're going to see in the next year or two is a flood on the market of new, and they'll be touted as new and improved and more sensitive and specific diagnostic tests. Some of these tests, actually just a few, may have received some grant money from us. Others have not. It is going to be difficult to know, for the clinician to know how to choose which one is best. I think we're going to have to do our due diligence and figure out which one which ones are the best.
Yeah, definitely. I can imagine that, research and diagnostic testing is an area that's so, so sorely needed with this illness and different companies are trying hard. But as you said, who's to know what's going to be accurate or not?
That's right. Well, they're all hitting for a sensitivity and a specificity running about 90%. So we're hoping that is the case. Some of these tests are going to still be indirect tests, you know, testing antibodies against some type of surface protein. Some will be direct tests where they actually test for fragments of the organism or they will expose immune cells to the immune cells of the patient to a standard stock of Borrelia burgdorferi and see if they respond in a way that suggests that they have a memory to it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that will also indicate that there's a potential for an infection, an active infection.
Yes, and also I've heard of another test that's actually antigen-related, isn't it?
That's right.
Yeah, so there's a lot coming. And my hope is over the next 5 years that we actually narrow this thing down and it's not so much guesswork anymore. And also I'm thinking, Dr. Koutsouras, because there's much rumor that a new Lyme disease vaccination might be introduced to our public.
That's right. Baxter has been testing a vaccine in Europe, and it is not the Limerix vaccine per se, but it is a vaccine against the same surface proteins on Borrelia, namely OspA and OspC, but modified so that any antibody formation will have no cross-reactivity with natural human tissue and give a patient receiving the vaccine any autoimmune or any side effects. The if I understand correctly, it will be three shots, including a booster, perhaps on an annual or maybe every two-year basis. I'm not sure exactly, but I suspect that this vaccine will now start. They will start testing this vaccine soon in the United States.
So, you know, we have to wait and see, of course. The strains in Europe, I've been told, are a little milder than the strains that we have over here in the United States. So a kind of a wait-and-see project here, right?
Yes, right. Milder and in many ways different. They have a lot of neurological manifestations in Europe. They have Borrelia abzelii, Guarinii, they tend to almost give you a picture of like secondary syphilis with inflammation of the spinal cord, peripheral nerves. It's a very different disease. And
wow,
that's why sometimes you see European literature that says 2 weeks of doxycycline cured the patient and they have they have brain inflammation. And, you know, you stop and look at it here in the United States and say brain inflammation, well, neurological sequelae usually have to be treated with intravenous antibiotics here in the States. So they're dealing with a similar, you know, similar bacterium, but certainly a different species, different strain, different behavior altogether.
Wow. There's so much to learn. Dr. Katsouris, you have been a tremendous guest for me. I'd love to have people visit your website. Could you tell the website for Lyme Research Alliance so people can learn more and get involved?
Absolutely. It's LymeResearchAlliance.org. And we have a very user-friendly website. You can scroll through everything about Lyme disease, about our research, all sorts of things, great photos, great pictures, all about our research, grant recipients, everything, anything and everything you need to know.
That's fabulous. You are a fantastic organization. I've admired you all for many, many years, and your fundraising work is tremendous. And now we've learned today about some of the different research work that you are supporting. So thank you, Dr. Katsouris, for coming on Limerite Radio. And thank you also for working so hard for the population and for the world at large to help amend the suffering with this illness.
Well, it's my honor and pleasure and privilege as well. This has been incredibly rewarding.
Thank you so much. And audience, please visit LymeResearchAlliance.org for more information and news about this tremendous organization. And thank you, Dr. Katsouris. And this is Katina Mackhurst with Limelight Radio. We'll see you again.
I don't know what's up there.
You've been listening to Limelight Radio with Katina Mackhurst. Tune in each Wednesday at 1 Pacific Time, 4 Eastern Time on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Get ready for some of the most provocative conversation with leaders in health, wellness, spirituality, and human potential. If you've missed any part of this hit radio show, visit LimelightRadio.com. That's LimelightRadio.com. We'll see you next week on Limelight Radio with Katina Mackhurst.
Then I go to my brother and I say, brother, help me please.